Council.
Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Folks, welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live Saturday night, July 17th, 2010, broadcasting from the monsoon-stricken Sonora Desert in Tucson, Arizona. During the break, I did find where the epicenter of this earthquake was. It was actually 20 miles away from Washington, D.C., it was the strongest to hit within 30 miles of Washington, D.C. since they began keeping records, by the way. It was centered, the quake was centered in the Rockville, Maryland area, said Randy Baldwin, a geophysicist with the Geological Survey's National Earthquake Information Center. So that's what I was looking for. Again, Baldwin said aftershocks could occur over the next couple days, but none had yet been reported. As of yesterday, anyway. I'm going to continue with this Professor McCanny soundbite, which aired about, it was either 5 or 6 years ago. But he pretty much sums up what the Earth will be like as this Planet X event plays itself out. So here it is again, folks.
Certainly much smaller than the much bigger object coming in behind it. And this would be coming in from the southern hemisphere. The point is, forget about dates. As I said last week and the week before, don't worry about dates. Or don't worry about internet chatter. Don't think you're going to all of a sudden wake up someday and hear on the evening news that a big object is coming in, and here's the date it's going to be here, folks. That is not going to happen. That's not going to happen on the evening news. My advice is simply to be prepared. If you are not prepared, then what are you thinking about? Are you, you know, and the other thing is, I'm not preaching for people to get prepared, because some people don't want to. I have a friend who said, I want to go up to my roof, put a big X on it, paint a big X on my roof, and if something comes in, I want to say, hit here first. That's what one of my friends says. So not everybody wants to be prepared. Not everybody wants to go through the rigors of living through a very difficult time and try and come out the other end when the success rate is going to be very low. So at any rate, man is a survivor. He's historically been a survivor. The fact that we are here today is a testament to the fact that man has been a survivor. our space dollars are being completely diverted into little private, very exclusive space programs of the elite. They're not going to share it with you. They're not going to share their cave systems with you. The question that comes out of this, and which is imperative right now, understanding that we are in a time of celestial change in the solar system, a time of when upheaval and severe change, not just average change, but severe change with our sun, with our weather, with the local solar environment of Earth and the other planets is potentially going to change radically. How can the people in power, supposedly, that are in the positions of federal, state, and in many cases local government, how can they possibly even cope with this when there has been absolutely no planning done for the general public? And the crisis that they propose to prevent by not telling the public is actually going to be 100 times worse once the public gets the drift of what's going on. The cities, the destruction and the looting, the just the complete destruction of our cities is going to happen internally. You wouldn't have to bring an army in here because the cities will self-destruct on their own. People have not been taught a little thing called personal responsibility, how to take care of yourself and your neighbor and make the best out of a bad situation.
Did want to interject here by stating I remember Bill Cooper saying that we don't need an external foreign army to come here to occupy the United States. The cities and the country will self-destruct on their own, and this just ties in with what we're hearing McCanny say at this time. Anyway, back to the bite.
Buddy has everything handed to them. Everything is easy. You simply go to the mall with your credit card, and everything's taken care of. When all of that changes, I call it the 95% rule. 95% of the public is going to wake up one day with nothing. And the real survivors are going to find a way to deal with all of these situations. And it's not going to be, it won't take long, it's not going to be pretty. But when these major events happen, it's going to happen very quickly. One thing we found out from Comet Bradfield is that these objects, of course, NASA sees them coming from a long time out, from a long distance away, but the public is going to have a week or two or three notice, is my prediction. And that's all, because we don't have the ability to get to the locations to observe what they are observing and not telling us about. It's a very difficult thing. I personally tried it myself, and really, once again, especially in the time frame we're in right now, the May time frame and June, these, of course, are the times that Harrington said were the observing times for those southern locations. So isn't it interesting that in the month of May and June, Australia has all of a sudden become extremely active with astronomers and military types hanging around the Project Wormwood facility in Australia. Now, I'm running out of time here, so I just want to recap what we might see as people on Earth. We may see large numbers of comets. We may see other planets capturing comets. We may see new moons evolving around other planets. We may see planets encountering medium or small or large comets with devastating results. We may see comets coming close to Earth with devastating results. We may be hit by meteors or many more meteors than we do, and of course this has been happening already. In the past year, many, many bolide-type objects coming in and striking Earth. At any rate, I'm out of time here. The things that we would expect are happening. They're coming in from the south. I don't have a time frame. I do not put time frames on these type of events unless I have sound data, and I'm working on getting sound data. That's all I have to say this week. Be prepared. Good night. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And
there you go, folks. Oh, we're coming back into the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Light of Dan Orion with your host, Sheldon Day. We'll be back in a few. Stay tuned, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you on the Orion Talk Radio Network. Well, that soundbite I played by Professor McCanny, the timing was just perfect for that. It just finished up when the commercial break was kicking in. So that's what we have to look forward to. Just hang on, I got wires here going around in circles in front of my face. That's what we have to look forward to in the way humanity, man, playing itself out. As we find out that this red comet of doom is headed our way, still have some stuff I'd like to read here. My friend John in Milwaukee, he threw this at me that there's a new TV show coming out called The Colony. An all-new survival experiment begins Tuesday, July 27th at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific. It says, "What would you do in the wake of a global catastrophe? Even if you survived it, could you survive the aftermath?" Season 2 of The Colony introduces viewers to a new group of volunteers with differing backgrounds, skills, and personalities to bear witness to how these colonists will survive and rebuild in a world without electricity, running water, government, or outside communication. Over the course of 10 episodes, the colonists, who include a construction foreman, teacher, carpenter, and auto mechanic, must work to utilize and strengthen their exploration, technology, and survival skills in ways they've never had to before. The Colony features ongoing commentary and input from experts in homeland security, engineering, psychology, and the medical community, with expertise and insight into what the future could look like after a biological disaster. Filmed on 10 acres of abandoned neighborhood on the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, The Colony simulated, well, isn't that something? Filmed on 10 acres of abandoned neighborhood on the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, The Colony's simulated environment had been left decimated by Hurricane Katrina, a naturally occurring disaster zone that was slated to be bulldozed and turned into a public park. Empty buildings, weedy streets, and the backwoods are all the colonists have to work with as they scavenge the essentials for survival from their surroundings while fending off threats such as wild animals and malicious outsiders. Throughout this season, the colonists face daunting physical and emotional challenges as they attempt to survive in a world void of all the niceties they've ever known, including environmental dangers such as disastrous weather and indigenous wildlife. The Colony begins with the volunteers facing a 72-hour isolation period to psychologically shift their perspective from our modern world to the end of the world. Shortly after the integration into the colony, the threat of survival becomes imminent as hostile outsiders push them into a physical confrontation. How do the colonists respond, and will their newfound skills be enough to protect their supplies and lives? Colony 2 location, Chalmette, Louisiana. For some reason, it shows the map here where they're filming this, but... You know, this is going to air on the Discovery Channel. This is just another thing that Lucas talks about, these various survival shows that they're trying to indoctrinate the mass public with. And I think there's a reason they're doing this. Now, in the course of my employment the other day. I stopped at a truck stop in Benson, Arizona, and I found a DVD called Solar Crisis. It stars, one of the stars in it is Charlton Heston. I have yet to watch it, but here's just another prime example of they're trying to leak things out in the movies to us. I mean, with the movie, we already seen the movie Knowing, and that shows these cataclysmic solar storms that just scorched the Earth. And now I find this one called Solar Crisis. I don't know what year this movie aired because I can't find it on the DVD case, but I'll probably be watching that tomorrow, and I'll get back to my audience here with what that movie's about. Let's see, no callers yet. I'm just checking the screen. If anybody wants to call in, number 716-213-6816, 716-213-6816. I have an email I'd like to read from John DiNardo from Wednesday. It's entitled Gulf Mexico Seabed Fracturing Upward. He says, do we have any buoy data, any buoy tracking data, sea depth changes over the past few months in the Gulf Coast, or has that data been concealed along with the Corexit 9500 shroud that was promptly sprayed to hide the evidence from the public, as stated by Keith Olbermann on an MSNBC report, wherein a congressman stated that, quote, something much more dangerous might be taking place under the ocean, end quote. Something so dangerous, folks, that BP needed to promptly lay down a Corexit blanket of secrecy with their Corexit spraying. Here's another data point he throws in. Reports still indicate that methane is flooding the Gulf waters at a rate 1 million times more than normal, and the NOAA research vessel, the Thomas Jefferson, has reported spotting new fissures. Last week, the science ship stunned some reporters with the revelation that the oceanographic team had discovered and measured a rift in the ocean floor miles from the BP wellhead. The rift was reported to be more than 100 feet long and widening. The rift, folks, was reported to be more than 100 feet long and widening. Oil and methane continues to plume from that rift. BP has also admitted damage beneath the seafloor. And then John DiNardo's friend Rhonda in Florida sent this. In a desperate attempt to stop a huge area of the Gulf ocean floor from possibly rupturing due to subterranean methane gas leading to a calamity no human has ever seen, BP has ripped a page from science fiction books. The giant oil company is now quietly preparing to test a small nuclear device in a frenzied rush against time to quell a cascading catastrophe. If successful, they will have the capability to detonate a controlled fusion-generated pulse. While the world watches BP's attempt to contain the oil gusher at the former Deepwater Horizon site, company officials have given the green light on an astounding plan to use what is known as a nuclear EPFCG charge if all else fails. Now, I guess this detonate a nuclear device would be called the Omega Plan. Most enterprises, whether business, government, or exploration, have a plan B to fall back on. To date, BP has attempted plans B through N, as N is a Nancy. Yet, it's the last-ditch plan, the Omega Plan, that holds the greatest risk. Yet, that plan may be the final hope to stop what some insiders now consider a catastrophe that could culminate with a world-killing mass extinction event that modern civilization could not survive. Well, there's a break, folks. Read some more news, maybe play one more soundbite. We'll be back. You're listening to The Light of Day on Orion with your host, Sheldon Day. Stay tuned.
Speech guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day. Live Saturday night, July 17th, 2010, from the monsoon-stricken Sonora Desert in Tucson, Arizona. Back to this article I was reading about the elite's plan to use a nuclear device in the Gulf of Mexico. At a super-secret security base, CFB Suffield, which is located in northern Alberta, Canada, area reports indicate that high-level engineers, physicists and military scientists are feverishly working to complete an explosively pumped flux compression generator. This would be the name of the nuclear charge if they plan to do that. According to published scientific papers, an explosively pumped flux compression generator can be powered by a very small controlled fusion explosion, in other words, a tiny nuclear bomb. Why the UK-based BP has set up operations at CFB Suffield is obvious. The company already runs three oil rigs on the base, have worked with Canada's chemical and biological efforts on and off for almost 40 years, and have strong ties to the Commonwealth's infrastructure. The CFB base, which incorporates DRDC Suffield, is one of six Canadian of six in the Canadian military. Now, folks, nuking the seafloor would be disastrous. But you see, they want to blame themselves for any post-nuking disaster, just so that the public will not find out that the seabed is bursting upward due to a burgeoning, horrendous natural cataclysm. They're really desperate to conceal this natural disaster, which, like I said, folks, is the root cause of this is being caused by Planet X's tremendous gravitational tugging on the Earth's mantle, even though it's as far out as it is. Keep in mind, it's a brown dwarf. It's a big object. So they're really desperate to conceal this natural disaster because they know that it's only the first domino in a long string of subsequent celestial provoked natural disasters, which would panic the population and lose the elite's reins of obedience and control over the mass mentality, thus triggering economic and political disarray for the elite in the driver's seat. You see, if people were to find out that this was really a natural disaster in the Gulf, the people would no longer be subservient and obedient to their government. They would just say, screw you, government, I'm not going to listen and obey you anymore. I'm going to just do what I have to do in order to put myself into a survival mode. And the elite, they don't want to lose control over the public. So they're so willing to make sure they keep control of the public that they want to be blamed for this disaster because they don't want the public to find out the Planet X is inbound. Anyway, you're listening to The Light of Day. Like I said, we're live Saturday night, July 17th, 2010. We have somewhat of an edited format here tonight where we have two extra breaks during each hour now. I want to play a soundbite here by Mark Hazelwood. This was played at some seminar or whatever by Clayton Douglas. Must have been about... at least 6 or 7 years ago. It's about a 9-minute soundbite, and then after that I'm going to finish the show with maybe another article or two. We're going to play that, and the break will probably, the upcoming break may interfere with this, but we'll finish it after the break. So anyway, here's Mark Hazelwood on Planet X, queuing it up as I speak.
As far as the earth changes that are happening right now with the poles melting and so forth, could that be caused by this planet moving in right now?
The approach of Planet X portends many changes in our solar system. Planet Earth is not being singled out at all. Jupiter and Neptune have already gone through 40 to 50% magnetic pole reversals at this time. Saturn has lost one of its rings as of late. It is on a tilt compared to what it was before. Venus and Saturn and the moon are all brighter than they ever have been. Mars is losing some of its water and its poles. Its poles are melting. There's an unprecedented dust storm going on there that they've never seen before. The atmospheres are thickening on Mars. In fact, the moon has suddenly grown an atmosphere about 6,000 feet that they're calling natrium. The sun is going through, I mean, it's like a popcorn popper. It's going through a cycle that they've never seen. It's supposed to end the normal 11-year cycle in the year 2000, and now it's just continuing on. The CMEs, the coronal mass ejections, are higher than ever. In fact, we're supposed to get hit within a few hours here with a full coronal mass ejection here that just happened within the last 24 hours because a small comet went by, and this triggered this ejection of material from the sun. In the last 20 years, Dr. Dmitriev has found out, this is a scientist working in Russia, they won't let this information out here, but it's leaking through. Like I said, there's a civil leaks about this information. From the mid-70s to the mid-90s, the uptick in seismic and volcanic activity has increased 4 to 500%, and that's not counting the last 8 years, which is basically the greatest part of the uptick. The whole of the weather changes that have been blamed on global warming or El Nino or something all have to do with the approach of this planet. And in fact, there's ancient history foretelling the last 7 years prior to the passage where you'll get the major weather changes that we're experiencing now. The volcanoes going off in the Congo, the mega earthquake in India last year that killed 50 to 100,000 people, according to the defense minister in India, and by the time the powers that be got the information at the end of the year, they had pared that down to 12,000, which is just letting you know, I'm sure you guys know what's happening with the whitewashed media. So, yes, there's a little bit going on as the approach of this planet, and by the way, physicist, master of science, James McKinney, explains in his book exactly how the plasmatic universe is interconnected. All the planets are interconnected with electricity. The solar winds are bringing the plasma into our solar system. There's an ionosphere that surrounds the entire solar system. It used to be 93 million miles thick. It has now increased in just the last few years 1,000%. That's plasma electricity that surrounds us like a small balloon might surround an object inside of it. The worst of the events should happen within 1 hour. I mean, if you're up in the hills, a well away from the shorelines in some country, I would wait, you know, at least 3 days for the sloshing to stop. I don't know. There's a possibility that some of the air may be contaminated because of destruction of certain infrastructure that isn't taken care of, like nuclear facilities and all kinds of different things that they store around in military establishment. Also, the tail of the comet, and you can call it a comet because it acts like a comet. It's on a cometary orbit, even though it's, from what I understand, a brown dwarf. That iron oxide dust, I don't think you want to be breathing that in. That could, in fact, kill you if it's concentrated enough. So you may want to consider an air filtration system inside your dome for a few days before you venture out. I don't know, you probably could just look outside and see what's happening if you're inside. Now listen up though, the Indians, there are accounts of the last passage, how they survived. I mean, some of them just went up to the hills and laid down in a gully and covered themselves up with wood and, you know, and dirt for a little while during the worst of the shift, and they were fine afterwards. So it's not like you need a lot of money. I mean, you could deal with this in a very low-tech way to survive. I mean, just as long as you can survive the water mainly, because that's the worst part of the event. There have been observed on Neptune, I believe it was, one of the moons, it was actually a plasmatic discharge etching a groove into the planet. I mean, this is how much plasma and electricity is coming into our solar system right now, that this kind of thing happens. And when this planet passes, part of the wing globe thing is the plasmatic discharges. I mean, if you've got a dome home underneath one of these plasmatic discharges. When I developed a certain level of clarity on this situation and understood that this information wasn't being put out in a palatable manner, in other words, I gleaned this information from 100 different sources. I paid thousands of dollars for books and read thousands of pages on a website and got the best and bits and pieces and put it into a book and realized I could go on and do that for another 2 years before the calamity. So I had to put it out at one time. Well, the reason I'm saying that is the reason I wrote this book is because I felt that the different sources that I were getting from were not presenting it properly, and that frightened me. It put the onus on me. I never wrote a book in my life, and I thought, hold it. I more than likely could write a book and present this in a clear fashion so where someone who is just first being exposed to it could get up to speed without having doing all the research I did. That had not been done prior to me doing it, from my understanding. Now, there may be a book or two out there I haven't uncovered yet that has done that, but I'm not aware of it. So I did this because of a spiritual pressure on me, a fear that if I lived through the aftertimes and thought that I could have been possibly responsible for getting this information out, and those people that heard that information could make the decision to prepare and save themselves, if I didn't do that, that guilt would be on my head. That's the fear that drove me. I could care less about the calamities. The fear of not doing my job. That was the job that, for whatever reason, I put it on myself once I reached that certain level of clarity, knowing that this is a fairly simple subject. It's not rocket science. We got a 10th planet. It comes by. Every 3,600 years, it causes earth changes when it goes by. How hard is that? But you need to put some detail in it. You need to do it in an organized fashion. And you need to draw a mosaic from all the different information sources to make this absolutely clear. If you view this object as some sort of Star Trek spaceship globe that is being driven around by some aliens, then you're not going to pay attention to the information. So I feel that part of the powers that be disinformation campaign is to go in within the spiritual community and create a name for yourself and put this kind of information out that aliens are driving this spaceship, and it may or may not come depending on what they decide at the last minute. I mean, it just irks me to death to hear this kind of stuff. But there's a reason for it. They don't want people to take this seriously. I put that on my website. They want you to feel this whole subject is completely ridiculous. They want to make fun of you. If you call up NASA and you ask about any ridiculous subject you can think of, they'll be courteous and they'll give you information. If you ask about Planet X, they immediately start to ridicule you. You got them in a sore spot. This won't sneak up on you. You'll see all of these things coming to a head very shortly, within a few short months. California, I fully expect to have their megaquakes prior to this passing. So that should be a little clue, or some of the volcanoes up in Washington State, around that area, should go off.
There's the end of that soundbite, folks. I heard Hazelwood talking about volcanoes there. I seen an email that came into my inbox about a mud volcano that was going off down in Indonesia, and I had some people that sent me an email about this, but there's no link or anything about it, so I don't know what that's about. Because they actually put something in the email about John DiNardo, what he has to say. But, you know, there's a lot going on. You see, all these diverse natural calamities, earthquakes of unprecedented frequency and intensity, mud flows, volcanic eruptions, multitudinous undersea volcanic eruptions, frequent epic flooding, common deluges of softball-sized hail, epic drought, single-day 40 and 50-degree temperature swings, frequent straight-line windstorms commonly clocked at 70, 80, and 90 miles an hour, sinkholes the size of office buildings, giant red dust storms called haboobs, a new type of windstorm which is called a derecho, etc. All these geological and meteorological calamities are being gravitationally and magnetically provoked all over our planet by a brown dwarf star accelerating toward us due to mutual gravitational attraction between it and our sun. I'm actually reading something here that John DiNardo said in this email, and which was supposed to be entitled "In Indonesia, Gulf of Mexico like flowing mud volcano," but he actually just says something else in here. But I thought I'd read this because this is interesting. Anyway, this protostar, believed to be of a mass that is hundreds of times greater than Earth's mass, was photographed by the U.S./Dutch-owned infrared astronomical satellite 27 years ago. Then the story was promptly suppressed by government officials because it would have aroused a survival mentality among the public, which would have threatened business, also threatening the elite's matrix of psychological domination over the masses. See a photocopy of the actual Washington Post article on the discovery of what we now believe to be a brown dwarf star called Planet X. There were actually at least six mainstream news publications that put this out back in the early mid-1980s, folks. He goes on, after you read the L.A. Times article about the Gulf of Mexico, like mud flow in Indonesia. Oh, he does give a link here for this mud volcano going off in Indonesia. But anyway, it says, after you read the L.A. Times article linked below about the Gulf of Mexico like mud flow in Indonesia, please click on the attachment above to view the photocopy of the front page Washington Post article announcing the discovery of this massive threatening celestial body with invisible magnetic and gravitational molesting paws. Okay, the mud volcano in Indonesia, this is dated July 10th. Indonesia's mud volcano flows on. After 4 years spewing about 100,000 tons a day, the Luzi mud volcano in East Java shows no signs of letting up. Initially linked to an earthquake. Can you, children, please be quiet? Hey, can you be quiet, please? Thanks. A little disruption there, folks. Anyway, initially linked to an earthquake, the spill in Indonesia is now being linked to drilling. July 10th, 2010, reporting from Indonesia, for four long years, Renai, I'm not even going to pronounce the name, but somebody has lived in the shadow of a monster, a menacing chemical flow of fetid gray mud that belches unchecked from the bowels of the earth near her home. Known as the Luzi mud volcano, its spread is so relentless, burping noxious gas, swallowing communities, killing 14 people, and forcing the evacuations of 60,000, that some say it could star in its own sci-fi thriller. I also forgot to point out, folks, last Sunday down in Tampa, Florida, there was a sinkhole that showed up. John DiNardo recently put out an email showing there's other sinkholes going on, and we think this is because the Earth is starting to split apart, figuratively speaking, as Planet X starts to molest the Earth's mantle with its overwhelming gravitational and electromagnetic forces. Back to the article on the mud volcano. Those in the U.S. who are wondering just how long the ruptured oil well in the Gulf could possibly keep gushing should listen to the cautionary tale of this person in this article. I can't even pronounce the name, but... Oh, I hate trying to pronounce names of these people in these other countries. Each day, the person in this article watches as a series of fissures marked by boom pump out 100,000 tons of mud. New chemical fires erupt from smaller gas-seeping cracks and a vision from hell that has closed roads and demolished buildings, including one just down the road from the person in this article's tiny home. The mud flow is slowly gobbling up the countryside, now covering 2,000 acres at 65 feet deep in some places, submerging factories, schools, farms, and a dozen villages. Indonesian officials have insisted that the deadly flow was a result of a natural disaster. Well, at least they're admitting it's a natural disaster. An earthquake that struck 175 miles away just before the mud began its onslaught 4 years ago. But evidence from a team of independent U.S. and British geologists suggests that the mud volcano, like the British petroleum oil disaster, was man-made, the result of a 2006 drilling accident at a nearby gas exploration site. And these geologists say they have no idea when the mud flow will stop, if ever. This article goes on and on, but I actually plan on reading an article here, but these 2 hours has actually gone by quite fast. You know, being without a guest, it's actually very hard for me to do a show and if I don't have any articles to read. So it actually went pretty smooth in my personal opinion. But I planned on reading an article here about other folks linked to the U.S. Naval Observatory that have been murdered for exposing Nibiru. But, well, show's over with, folks. Anyway, you've been listening live day on the Orion Talk Radio in the muggy, monsoon-stricken Sonora Desert with a dew point of 61 degrees at the Tucson Airport. We'll be back next week, probably with guest Jay Widener from Jesse Ventura's True TV TV episode, Apocalypse 2012. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Be back next week. Good night.
Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Big Shot of the Milliwatt. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.